Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth, on the break! The Radio Network Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports in Depth is the show. It's that segment. Call it the we get a call from former WS of Mel Smith Jr. But a prayer opens up. Dear Lord, thank you for all things, for all good and wonderful things coming. Thank you for the little things you so large to be. Thank you for blessings unseen, unknown, all unmerited. Thank you for your knowledge that you sit down on the cross so we may have the right to your life. Thank you for being our God. Thank you for this morning, getting up last night, laying down. Thank you for, as my mother says, us being woken today, clothed in our right mind. We want to thank you for on a Tuesday. Thank you, our summer comes around. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You cannot say enough of it. And we ask you, Lord, to not give us so much what we want. Give us what we need. We just need. We ask you to bless the name of your darling son, Jesus, and I close and say that my God may not be your God, but my God is God. In your holy name, of Jesus. Amen. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Emil Soul, Sports and Depth of the show, calling the doctor segment, legendary scribe and radio icon, Dr. Emily Stanley Jr., senior host of the renowned radio show Sports in Depth, once again bringing the Calling the Doctor segment back to the forefront as former WF star Mel Little Coco Smith Jr. comes with the doctor with questions, thoughts, revelations, and the making, once again, of another informative, insightful, educational 60 minutes of sports talk history and in-depth insight and intellect on Rainbow Soul, Blake Radio. And, wow. Interesting things. June, as we know, big birthday month. The month kicked off with the first of my daughter, Chastity, and my Uncle Robert. And then the next day, he's going to be my father-in-law, Juanito Santiago Perez, Hoopster, on the 4th. Lewis Hart is the man who brings the basketball insight and depth. The 8th is the birthday of Leroy Neiman. And Bobby Goodman, who was the last boxing president at Madison Square Garden and the matchmaker for years for Don King and Don's right-hand man. And then we move on, and it's the birthday of David Hersher, one of the last of the legendary great PR men in this business and the man who was begotten and learned from none other than the legendary Joey Goldstein, the late, great Joey Goldstein. Wow. We move on to the month. And we find that also we have in this month the birthday of Derek Jeter, which is coming up this Sunday. My sister, the 27th. My grandfather, late grandfather, is the same day as Jeter. Mike Tyson celebrates a birthday this month, as well as my late cousin Merle and Joel DeFreitas, Dave Hersher. June is busting. You know, June was such a great month as a kid because usually when my birthday came, school was out. My birthday was the last day of school, or 2 days before school, or 2 days after. So June was always a big month. I remember Sonny used to sing, June is busting out all over. But Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth with the Blake Radio Network. And as always.
Hey, good doctor.
Rooney?
Hey, good doctor. How that call? Hey, Lusby Jr.
Hey, Rooney. Okay, just answer the phone. How you doing, Rooney?
Hey, Doc, look, I know that you're the biggest, busiest person on earth, but we got a quick second. I have a couple of things I wanted to bounce off you, if I could. Got a moment?
Yeah, Rooney. Yeah, sure, Rooney. I always got a moment. You know, Rooney is always called. You know, I love these guys because Rooney calls and he bounces these things off me, and it gives me a chance kind of to reflect on some things, and he brings us such great ideas. Yeah, go. What we got, Rooney?
Well, Doc, over the weekend and up until actually a day or two ago, I was watching, you might as well call it a George Foreman Fest. I watched his rumbles with Joe Frazier, Ken Norton, of course, my guy, the greatest, Muhammad Ali.
You know,
and I was wondering, Doc, you know, what were your thoughts, you know, as he battled over those guys? Because he's destroyed Frazier and Norton, Doc. Two guys that didn't normally get destroyed. I just want to know about your memories of those fights. Doc?
Rooney.
I just wanted to bounce off you, Doc, your memories of those rumbles. Him and Frazier, Foreman and Frazier, and Foreman and Norton. And then, of course, the greatest last.
Well, you know, the thing that I saw the second Frazier and Foreman. Hold on, don't move. Yeah, on the line here, when you call, people call. Yeah, you know, what I remember about that second fight was it was at the Nassau Coliseum. And what I remember about that fight, too, was Elizabeth Taylor was there. And the shocking thing was when Joe entered the ring, he had a hood on. And when Joe took the hood off, he was bald-headed. Rooney?
Yeah, Doc, I'm just listening. I'm in amazement. Joe,
he'll never
remember that.
Yeah, Joe, when he took the hit and the crowd went, they went wild. And what I remember, I think, if I'm correct, that's the only fight ever held at the Nassau Coliseum. If I'm correct, and if you remember at the time, it was a non-championship fight because both guys had lost the title. I mean, Foreman had took it away from Joe, and Ali had took it away from George. and I remember that Elizabeth Taylor was ringside at that fight, and it wasn't as brutal as the first fight, but it was the same result as George stopped Joe. And it was anytime you get two guys of that caliber in the ring, in the New York City vicinity, it just was electric. And, you know, the first fight was just a devastating display of punching power by one of the great heavyweights of all time. And, you know, and so much, you look back, so much in the mold of Sonny Liston, Liston was unquestionably more skilled than George. You know, Sonny Liston was 18 years old. Sonny Liston was the best heavyweight in the world. You know, he wound up going to the Slammer. That only was the reason that he didn't fight then and didn't dominate the heavyweight scene. I mean, people understand that late great Customato did not, for any shape, form, or fashion, want Patterson to fight. He knew Patterson could not beat Sonny Liston. He knew it.
Let me tell some of people before you say that. Because it's something that only you would know. I'm laughing, not because of poor Floyd, but is it true, Doc, that Floyd was so embarrassed by the loss that he put on like a disguise, fake nose,
disguises,
fake glasses?
You know, it's funny. I remember a newspaper picture, and they say, you know, they showed Floyd Patterson in disguise. Now, to Patterson's credit, Patterson wanted to fight Liston. Champion. Hey, man, he deserved, no, because there were those who thought Liston's past, you know, prison time. Hey, I got nothing to do with that. Man, no one contender. He deserves a shot. Let's do this. But Cuss knew that Floyd could not beat him. And when Floyd, to his credit as a champion and a great human being, would say, well, Cuss, what's happening with the Liston fight? And he would say, well, you know, they wouldn't get back to me, or they don't want to fight right now. The late, great Jose Torres, who was instrumental in my greatest of boxing jackets being elevated to the level, is said, you know, Cuss was so adamant in Floyd not fighting Sonny Liston that Cuss refused to take his manager's cut out of both purses. That's how adamant, that's how stringent, that's how sincere he was in his refusal to have Floyd fight Sonny Liston. He did.
Wow,
I remember.
You mean that he was so adamant against this fight that he didn't take his cut and leave that old rubber?
He did not take
his
manager's cut, which you're talking about, 33% and
30%.
Yeah,
that's a third.
Out of both purses. That's how adamant, stringent, how much zeal he had in the anti-movement, but it became inevitable. And I remember the closed circuit fight because we were in school. I remember a lot of kids said, man, yeah, I mean, both fights didn't get out the first round. Both fights didn't get out the first round. I mean, you know, and then, you know, the legend and the myth of Sonny Liston. I mean, really, if you look back, if Cassius Clay doesn't come along, Liston would have been dominating for a long time. But Floyd, hey, man, let's do this. But Cuss didn't want the fight to happen. Now, the thing about George, I mean, George was the second. If you go through that span of time, you know, George won the gold medal at the Olympics. The guy before George who won the gold medal was Joe. That's ironic because he beat Joe for the title. And the guy, you know, when Ali was in the Olympics, Ali did not win the heavyweight gold medal. Ali won the light heavyweight gold medal. And then you go back to Floyd Patterson. When he won the gold medal, Floyd Patterson won his gold medal as a middleweight.
Well, Doc, is it true, Doc, that Joe fought the finals with a broken hand?
Some kind of
a broken hand or cracked hand or something, but refused to give up the shot at winning the gold?
Listen, I mean, you got to understand, you know, Joe didn't want to stop fighting in that 15th round in Manila. I mean, Georgie Benson, and I believe I had asked Mr. Futch that, but, you know, Joe, I mean, the great line that Futch said, hey, Joe, you know, you can't see, you know, nobody will ever forget what you did here. And Joe was really the fresher of the two at the end of the fight, but, you know, Joe did not talk to Eddie Futch and Georgie Benton for years for starting. You know, Eddie said, Joe, you can't see. He's pot-shotting you. You can't see, Joe. Joe wouldn't talk to Eddie Futch for years.
And that's the kind of warrior Frazier was, because I believe when I saw the press conference afterwards, he admits that he couldn't see out of the eye, that the eye was closed.
And if you listen to the press conference afterwards, as I see it, Joe was the fresher of the two. Joe was ready to go another five.
Wow.
No, because they fought what it was. Not only was it hot outside, they fought inside. It was inside, non-air conditioned. The thoughts of that fight was it was going to be two washed-up guys, a dull fight, you know, always going to win easily, or just going to be a sloppy affair. Cosell didn't go to the fight. It was the fight that Sal Marciano first went to, and Sal, keep it where it is, tells the story that, you know, Cosell had told him, make sure you do a good job, young man. And one of the great stories that Marciano tells, Sal tells, was, you know, Joe Frazier almost drowned before the fight. He said, hot as it could be in Manila, Joe comes to an interview with ABC. He's got a red jumpsuit on, you know, and interviews Joe. And now Joe is near the pool, thinking that it's the shallow end of the pool. So it's hot. Joe jumps in the pool. It's not the shallow end. It's the deepest end.
Wow.
Joe goes right down. They jump in. They get Joe out. Joe Frazier almost drowned before the fight. Catullus Manil. Sal Marciano, man. I talked to Sal, saw Sal at the funeral of the late, great Bill Gallo. How'd I hurt you say that? He's late, great. And he told that story. But, you know, the thought was, even Ali, I went in the press room, the Anderson and Jerry Eisenberg was sitting. That's what I love so much about those pre games at the football game, because, you know, there's Eisenberg and there's Anderson. Hey, Doc, hey, Mel. We sit down, and they were talking, you know, because Ali had kind of saw Joe in the fight and said, whoa, oh, man, Joe is slow. Oh, my God. Hey, let's make this fight. This is going to be a piece of cake. It's going to be a piece of cake. Now, Ali had made some comments, and it's amazing. A lot of people in the documentary with Joe Frazier talking about, well, you know, Ali said some things. And, you know, nobody said that then. And Joe... I remember watching that fight. I saw that fight again at the Nassau Coliseum with my brother James, my beloved brother. I always say Jesus had a brother named James, and so do I. And my good friend, my children's godparents, Julius and Turquoise Irving, and the legendary dean of sports writers, legend himself, the living legend, Howie Evans from the Amsterdam News. And I remember after the fight, Howie asked Julius his assessment of the fight and of Ali, and he said something I'll never forget. He said, Ali was a scientific fighter, able to make the adjustments, able to do the things that were needed, you know, knowing when he had lost a round and not spending any unnecessary energy, and knowing when to take over a round when the opportunity was there. And Julius had made tremendous observation, and we saw that fight at the Nassau Coliseum. I brought my pacer. I'd become a police officer, and Joe, as I remember it too, Patty Dreyfus, who was the first lady of PR boxing-wise in Madison Square Garden, working with the late, great John Francis Xavier Condon and the incomparable, my man, Tommy Kenville. Well, she was managing Joe. I believe she became the first female boxing manager. I remember seeing that. She was in Joe's corner, and Futch was there because Yank Durham had passed on. Yank was the guy that was in Joe's corner. In fact, I remember asking John Condon, I was doing a sports and action cable show. The late, great Dr. Frank Banzer, my first mentor, was the first African-American to host a cable sports show. Cable television gave, New York Cable gave him his show, and he brought me in. He said, Stanley, I want you to work with me on this. Give me guests. And I said, Doc, you became the host, the director, the producer. And what had happened, Frank was a principal in the New Jersey school system, as well as a former player, close friend of Willie Mays and Hank Aaron, all the guys. They loved Frank. What a great human being. You know, Frank Banzer was the first guy I ever heard. When I first met Mr. Banzer, he said something I'll never forget. Two things. And the first thing he said is he just took to me. He said, hey, Stanley, you know, I want somebody to take my place. And people always told me in the ensuing years when I met them and they would meet me, Stanley, oh, he said, Frank Bannister loves you. Frank Bannister always talks about you. And met Frank at Mutual Black Neck Radio, me and Sid Gatlin Jr. We were both graduates of NYSES, New York City School of Announcing and Speech, our broadcasting school, and we went up on holiday. It must have been probably Lincoln's birthday, because in those days you had the day off that the birthday came on. Lincoln's the 12th of February and Washington 22nd. So we went up to Mutual Black Net Radio. Sid Gatling said, hey, Mel, now let's go up and talk to, because we had just got out of broadcasting school, let's talk to Bannister and Sheldon Lewis. He said, you know, I'll talk to Sheldon, the news guy, and you talk to Frank, the sports guy. And Frank just, he took me in. Got me passes to the Mets and Yankees, and he also showed me how I can get, you know, tickets, because in those days, even now, they give you tickets to the writers. And he, in the process, wound up getting this cable show, Sports in Action, and I wind up co-hosting the show, and I wind up hosting the show. I became, as I think about it now, the second African-American to host a cable show on New York City Cable. And he also said that time and talent is worth money, Frank. And he knew Ali. He knew all these guys. He was my first mentor. The second one was the first African American done everything radio wise. Hal Jackson, Sunday Morning Classics, and the last
another legend, Doc. These are all legends you're talking about now.
Oh, yeah, right. And
Frank
then the last one,
Hal Jackson, legend.
And then my last mentor was the late great, who in this year was the 1 year of his passion. Arthur Jr., Arthur George.
The great Arthur George Rush Jr.
And so I wind up in a short span of time getting into the business, working for Mutual Black Network Radio. I covered the Golden Gloves. I did a story for Encore Magazine, as Frank asked me to do a piece for him. And then I wind up, I was co-hosting a cable show. So I was writing the gust, the just and the fiber of everything that was happening. And I remember, like you said, the second fight. I remember the Phil in Manila. I mean, Sal Marciano had told me that it was seen as a fight with two washed up guys, and it turned out being probably the second best of the three. I mean, the second one was a fight in January. Ali, unanimous decision.
Doc, you're usually right on the money with this kind of stuff and stuff. Having known you personally and your knowledge of it, did you think, and Ali was always my guy, but did you think either one of them, Doc, had that much left that they showed in the Thriller? I mean, that was
an absolutely brutal rumble. I didn't understand the mindset that it was. I mean, everybody was there. But there was, because the talk of two washed up guys was something that I heard in the aftermath. The thinking was that not so much that Ali was washed up in certain circles, is the thinking was that Joe was washed up. And
so, in other words, you're saying that they basically figured that it could be a relatively easy night for Ali.
An easy night for Ali, or two guys would be waltzing around the ring. You know what I mean? And I think one of the things that was part of the mindset, maybe of Cosell, along with the fact that he had become tired of traveling. I just can't think of him not wanting to be ringside at an Ali fight, especially with the foe he was fighting. I mean, if you look at the guys that Ali fought in these stages of his career, he won the title back from Foreman, and then he's fighting Joe again. I mean, these three are the greatest heavyweight champions of all time.
Yeah, you're talking about some serious fighters now.
Yeah. I mean, the consensus was that after the Phil in Manila, they both should have walked out arm in arm and said, "Hey, sayonara, we're not doing it anymore." But
they really should have, Doc, because that fight was so brutal that both of those guys should, like you said, walked arm in arm. Doc, that fight was so brutal. That at the end of it, both win or lose or both Ali, they should have, like you said, knocked on to sing Kumbaya.
Joe said, "Lordy, Lordy," with a great chin. He said, "I hit him with some punches that would have brought down a building."
And he
Ali
did.
Ali said, "It was the closest thing close to death." He said, "After me, Joe Frazier's the greatest." And what I was going to allude to earlier was Ali had made some comments, guerrilla, boom, 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 boom. And he called Butch Lewis at the fight. He said, Butch said they want to see down Ali's locker room. And everybody in the Frazier locker room, Butch said, they're looking at it like, Butch Lewis, what's going on here? Why is Ali calling you? And he told
Butch, thinking that might be an enemy in the camp.
Well, he told, go get Marvis. And bring Marvis to me. And Marvis came in. And Ali said, "Marvis, I want to apologize to you, but let you understand that the things said were done from a PR standpoint of view. Didn't mean anything from a negatory standpoint, but I heard they bothered you, so I want to apologize to you and send my apologies to your dad. And if you do not accept my apology right here, right now, then I'm not talking to anybody else, and I don't want the press in here." And Marvis said, I forgive you, I understand. And because I asked Marvis about that, Marvis said, "Yeah, Doc, that happened. You know, at this fight, he called me in, and he said the thing I told my dad. He said my dad would say, well, why didn't he tell me that? You know, and there's some merit to what Joe said. You know what I mean? He said, why did he tell me that? I remember Ray Leonard after the first Tommy Hearns fight at the press conference. Ray Charles Leonard got up and said, "I want to apologize to Tommy," he said, "because I said some things that I didn't have to say." You know, there are a lot of guys who kind of don't like Ray, a little envious Ray, say Ray was handpicked. I remember Ray saying that. I remember Ray, I remember seeing the interview. And Ray said, you know, I want to apologize, you know, Tommy, because I said some things that I didn't have to say.
You know, Doc, you had to bring that fight up. Now, you know, I got to ask you about. Now, you know, a rumble, you know, by the way, that was a terrific rumble. You know, at first to the, I guess, kind of untrained eye, you're looking at Ray and Tommy, and I guess it wasn't, you know, wasn't necessarily knocked down, dragged out immediately, kind of like a high-spirited game of chess. But that that fight was a very brutal and grueling fight. And to me, it brought out the greatness in
that fight.
And
was
the
a, hold on, no, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back. Don't move. Here we go. One time.
Broadcasting, broadcasting, broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world, to the world, to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth, on the Blake. Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, Channel Sports is the show. Call in the doctor. Mel Smith, Jr., Luke Coco, jumps on the phone, asks a question, makes some revelations, and next thing you know, we're here. A good 27 minutes already. Talking sports, reflecting on some of the great fights, great times, mention some of the great names of the people in the world of sports and the world of the sweet science, and also remembering some birthdays. And now, you know, Harold Weston, who's such an integral part of our panel here, you know, Harold is not a big Ray Leonard fan. You know, he's a Ray Pitt guy. You know, we have to understand about it. Ray Leonard beat every great fight of his era. Ray Leonard beat Tommy Hearns. Ray Leonard beat Roberto Duran. Ray Leonard beat Marvin Hagler, and he beat Wilfred Benitez. Okay, he beat the youngest champion in the history of boxing. Okay, he beat the greatest Latin fighter that ever lived. He beat Tommy Hearns, who should have lost to nobody, and he beat Marvin Hagler after being out of boxing 4 years.
And that's one of the greatest Hall of Famers right off the bat.
You know what I mean? I mean, and you know, and Ray, you know, if you look back, you know, a lot of people said the second fight with Tommy was a draw. Boom, boom, boom. People forget that. First of all, that was a 12-round fight. And second of all, had that right with 15 rounds, Ray was going to knock out Tommy again. People forget. You know, Ray was ready to knock out Tommy again. Okay, now, took a beat in the first Iran fight. But that fight showed me that he could, you know, he had heart, he had courage, and nobody else could beat him. But if you take away the second Nomas fight, he won the third fight, so he still won one. Okay, he still
well,
now, won
let me
one.
Ask you something. A lot of people thought, me included, I may be wrong, but based on the way, Doc, that Ray fought Duran the first time, did Duran get into Ray's head a little, Doc, at all? Of course, instead of him doing the
Tommy
flash,
Hearns,
he was all of the
ring. Well, the late, great Don Duffy said, you know, you got to fight a Duran before you can beat a Duran. Duran did not allow Ray to do the things he wanted to do. You know, he didn't. He got close to Ray. He made Ray fight. That fight made Ray, though, because if Ray hadn't fought like that, he don't beat Tommy Hearns. If Ray Leonard don't go through Duran in Montreal, he don't beat Tommy Hearns.
Well, I never thought of that, Doc, when you put it that way. So you're saying that toughened him up for that brutal Tommy fight.
But I tell you, Doc,
the way Ray came out, Doc, toe-to-toe, I'm like, wow, what is this? Ray going to go toe-to-toe with them, Doc?
Hey, but see, there's two things people forget. You know, Duran wasn't 100% in that fight. I mean, you know, Duran had a cold. You know, Duran hit Ray in the second round with a monstrous right hand. But he didn't pursue it because he said, I wasn't 100%. I didn't want to spend my energy and not finish him, and then I'd be finished. You know? So he pulled back. I mean, I remember they had the great line by Ray Orsell. I'll never forget his wife, Teresa Orsell, and I'll never forget her for a whole lot of reasons. One, because she has the name of my beloved baby sister, Teresa. And I remember at the press conference at the then now defunct All-Star Cafe, when I asked the question, she said, and she called me Melvin, and she said two things that I'll never forget. Call me Melvin, and I asked her, how is it married to Ray O'Sell? She said, Melvin, it was Christmas every day with that man. It was Christmas every day with that man, you know, and to you, when you hear a lady talk about him, it just touches my heart. I remember the great Audrey Chambers, and nobody sings Don't Let Me Lose This Dream the way she does. I mean, Aretha does it, and I remember when Chris Chambliss, the greatest batting coach the Yankees had in this era, how a guy gets fired after winning the World Championship, I don't know. And Chris and Audrey, as well as the Yankees, I mean, this was an affair here in the city. All the Yankees were there. Chris was there. Willie Randolph and his wife was there. Two or three of the players, their wives were there. They had PR guy. And she had that lore in the show where you introduce the band and you better have. And I'll never forget what she said when she introduced her husband. She said, I want to introduce my better half. And that just touched my heart, a woman to say that about her man. I want to introduce my better half. It's something that I've never forgotten, as well as what Teresa Arcel said about her. And I see her now. And she said, Melvin, it was Christmas every day with that man. And, man, that just touches your heart. You know, when
it
you
does.
Realize,
it does, Doc.
No, it does. I mean, yesterday, not yesterday, the Sunday, I want to salute my brother and his wife, Paulette, for 25 years of marriage today, and also
congratulations,
to,
indeed.
To Susan and Horace Mendoza for 30 years today. And they had a wedding anniversary at her church this past Sunday, and her children read Bible verses. I'm going to look those verses up and read them. And they were both touching and so profound. One was from Genesis 18-25, and that's where there's that line. It's one of my favorite Bible verses where God looks down and says, it is not good for man to be alone. You know, people talk about it being alone, and God said, it's not good for man to be alone. I will make him help. And woman comes from the fact that woman means coming from man. You know what I mean? And it is why a man leaves his mother and father to be with his woman. And then the daughter wrote about love. I'm going to look that up. We've got another good 25 minutes left. I'm going to look those verses up and read them. And I remember there was some talk about Duran having heart problems. And Ray O'Sell came with this classic line. He says, Duran has heart problems. He says, what heart problems? He says, Duran doesn't have a heart.
And the ring he was, Doc, and the ring he was.
Oh, he was a monster. He was a monster. I mean, and that fight showed me, because, you know, what had happened, you know, one judge had Duran, one judge had Leonard, and I believe one judge had it even, if I'm correct. And there was some griping going on, and then the judge turned around, and it was Duran. People didn't, you know, because Ray had won the gold medal in Montreal, but people forget that the fighter picked as the number one fighter out of that core, and that was a great core. Well, Leo Randolph won a world championship. The Spinks brothers won a world championship, and Ray won a world championship. In fact, the Spinks brothers, as we look back at it, you know, Michael won the light heavyweight and the heavyweight championship of the world. Now, I don't, they, you
really?
Know.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
cool.
Well, Mike. Mike won the light heavyweight.
Wasn't Howard Davis on that team?
Howard Davis was the guy picked as the best fighter of the group. And in fact, Howard and Ray Leonard were neck and neck in money making when they first came out. Howard's making just as much as more than Ray. Howard was close to had a fight in Puerto Rico, close fight, beating the late. I'm looking at an autographed glove by him too, Edwin Chapin Rosario.
Oh, Chapo Rosario.
Chapo dropped Howard in the last round, and that turned out to be the deciding factor, and he retained his championship. Howard was winning. You know, Howard Davis.
No, you know, I got to mention something else about it. You know, Doc, when you go on Instagram, you just got to get me on a tangent with all of these guys. I mean, we just start bringing up all this incredible stuff. Now I got to mention this. You're making me mention everything under the sun. Now I have to mention this.
Doc. Hector was just going through this guy and that guy, and I got to get your thoughts on this rumble, this showdown between Hector and Chapo Rosario, I believe, at the Garden.
At the Garden. Well, what showdown? Well, what showdown? I mean, it's a 12-round fight. I mean, what showdown? Hector and Rosario cannot outbox Hector Camacho for 12 rounds. I mean, Hector was at his best. Edwin Rosario could not. I mean, come on. Edwin Rosario could not outbox Hector around for 12 rounds. There's nothing to talk about. You know, sometimes the people in this business, and Harold talked about it yesterday, guys who are in this venue because of complexion, as Ali says, they're the complexion with the connection, you know what I mean, or they know somebody. Not that they know anything. But, I mean, you know, there were guys that say, well, you know, he hurt him. Okay, so he hurt him in the third, fourth round. Big deal. So he hurt him in the third or fourth round. So automatically you give him 4 rounds?
Yeah, well, so going into that third rumble, round. Doc, the build-up was supposed to be the incredible boxer puncher skills of Hector against the brutal right hand and left hook of Chapo. That was supposed to be the big hype going into the fight.
Hector won the fight unanimous decision. What's there to talk about? Hector won the fight unanimous decision. Well, you know, I can understand if it was a split decision. I can understand if the cards were close. Hector won the fight going away.
Oh, no, that's true, Doc. No question about that. But I'm just saying, you know what the pre-fight hype was, that this could finally be the guy to put Hector in his place.
Okay, Rooney. Okay, pre-fight hype, this could finally be the guy to do it. Did he do it?
He didn't come close.
In the conversation.
He drew one really decent punch in the rumble.
I mean, there were guys who didn't like Hector's style and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I'm in the first question. Man, what are you talking about? So he hurt him. Big deal, he hurt him. So what, he hurt him, you know? So I mean, so he had a hard line drive to deep right center. Yeah, good. It's a long fly ball to the warning track. I mean, Hector Camacho had the potential to be the greatest Latin fighter of all time, or number two to Duran. I don't see anybody. But the thing is, Hector Camacho is the only guy that can say, okay, Hector Camacho is the only guy that can say that he beat Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran. Hector Camacho, you know, Tommy Hearns can't say that. Marvin Hagler can't say that. Okay? Hector Camacho beat Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran.
He was slick,
okay?
No question.
No, Benitez can't say that. Benitez beat Duran, he didn't beat Ray. Marvin beat Duran, but he didn't beat Ray. Tommy beat Duran, but he didn't beat Ray. You know? Ray lost to Duran. Marvin didn't beat Ray. Tommy didn't beat Ray. Benitez didn't beat Ray. You know, and you have to understand about, we know, when Duran beat Ray, as the legendary, the incomparable Marion B. Boykin, and the B stands for black, bodacious, brilliant, and a brother. You know, people forget, Duran came up two weight classes to beat arguably the second greatest welterweight of all time. Without question, one of the top four of all time. I mean, there's Ray Leonard, there's Ray Robinson. I mean, came two weight classes, and he beat Ray. And the thing about it, you know, in the second fight, what is not acknowledged is that Duran wasn't really ready. Duran, the fight happened a week or two sooner. So Duran didn't really finish the kind of training that he needed, because had he been, he beat Ray again.
And look what they did on the way to that rumble, Doc. Moving up on the way to doing that, he just happened to take a couple of tune-up fights, one including the former junior welterweight champion of the world, Carlos Palomino.
For Carlos Palomino on a Friday in Madison Square Garden as the co-main event on the night that Larry Holmes beat Mike Weaver, who was beating Larry. I remember that fight for a host of reasons. One was, I got there early, and I went into one of the dressing rooms to watch the fight on TV. And who comes in the dressing room? It's Larry Holmes' dressing room. And Larry and Richie Giacchetti, they come in, they look at me, and you know, and they start doing things in the dressing room like it was my dressing room. You know, nobody said, hey, what are you doing here? Nobody said you got to leave. I guess the way I was dressed, if it made to figure, they might have thought they maybe, you know, the guy's security. But they came in, and I watched some of the fight up until Duran came in. And then when Duran came in, I left to see Duran live. But if I had won, the first couple of rounds, I watched, and I remember the look on Palomino's face when he sat down after the first round. And he went back to his corner. And he sat down. And the expressions on his face said, nobody told me this. This is not where I should be on a Friday night in Madison Square Garden. I mean, the look on his face was, this guy is a monster across the other end. I have no idea what to do with him. And somewhere along the line, I have been, in the words of the late, great Malcolm, I have been bamboozled. I mean, because the look on his face was, you know, and you know, it was
actually,
like,
that what first, it was, having seen him fight myself, his face showed stunned disbelief.
That's what he was, stunned, couldn't believe it. The hand speed, you know, he said, this is not where I should be on a Friday night in Madison Garden, New York City. And I remember after the fight, which Duran won going away, and they said, well, you know, could you have knocked him out? And Duran said, yeah, possibly could. He said, but I didn't train as hard as I should. And they said, why? He said, well, there's a carnival in Panama, so I wanted to go to the carnival.
And in those moments, that's not just braggadocio from Duran, because, Doc, as great a fighter was he as he was, I mean, let's face it, Roberto was known to get his party on. He is a consequential guy that worked hard and played hard.
Yeah. I mean, he said that, and I remember, because what I remember, too, was after the Duran fight, a horde of the crowd left. I mean, they came to see Duran. After the Duran fight, a great contingency of the crowd left. They left, and Larry was behind in the fight, but he came back and knocked out Weaver in the latter parts of the fight to retain his championship. It was, in fact, you know what I think of, it's the only time Larry fought in the Garden. No, he fought again, but he fought years later when it became the Paramount. It was no longer
right,
the Garden.
Yeah,
it was the Paramount. So that was the only time that Larry, as I think about it now, that Larry fought in Madison Square Garden. You know, he was the main event there.
You know, Doc, now that you mentioned Larry Holmes, you know, pardon me for cutting you off, but it's something I have to ask you, Doc, because Larry, you know, every time I watch Larry, you know, Doc, and maybe it's called following Ali, because who can top that act? I don't get the feeling that Larry feels that he ever got to do
I think Larry doesn't really feel that way, but I think sometimes he plays on it because people will say that. And I think what he does is he'll ride that wave. I remember going, I did a story on Larry, I did a two-part story. I went down to Princeton, PA, did a two-part story. Him and my daughter, Demony, the greatest daughter in the world, they share the same birthday, and she has an unlimited invitation on November 3rd to go down to his restaurant and have dinner because they both had the same birthday. And I remember going down there and talking to Larry, and Larry told me a couple of things. He said, you know, he could live off $10,000 a year. He said he could make the adjustment. And his daughter talked about how proud Larry Holmes was about being Muhammad Ali's sparring partner. Also, everything he said. He said, Larry, he sparred with Ali and got a black eye and proudly walked around. Hey, the black eye, Ali gave me the black eye, man. Yeah, see the black eye? Ali gave it to me. You know what I mean? Because that proud of being Ali's sparring partner, you know what I mean? And if you look at Larry Holmes, second longest reign as heavyweight champion outside of Joe Louis, 7 years, made the IBF. You know, he was a guy to put the IBF on the map. Great jab, great champion. Great human being. I mean,
tremendous heart, tremendous chin. Is he in your top five of all time? Everybody's down.
Yeah, he's in. Well, I said there's Ali, there's Joe, there's Foreman, there's Tyson. Okay, he's in the top 10. I, you know, they got Sonny Liston, maybe Larry. Mm-hmm. You know, you could flip him there. Liston, Larry is there.
Well, he said, all right. So you say,
Patterson.
If not the time, then definitely say the top seven or eight. Either way,
Ten
easily.
I mean, there was some who put him in the top five. You know what? Dang, wait a minute, hold on. I'm getting carried away here now. Wow. Ali is Foreman. There's Liston. There's Frazier. There's Joe Louis. How'd I get carried away like that? There's
the
Joe Louis.
Mama.
So that's five. That's five. So, I mean, so Joe's in the top five. You know, question. I mean, so Ali, Joe, without question, top five.
You know, it's funny you should mention Joe Louis, Doc. I just have to tell you this. I always think of the late, great George Washington, the trainer, who, you know, led Mark Breland to all those Golden Gloves titles and part of his professional career, and Riddick Bowe also. And I used to always pick on him, Doc, in the sense that he knew Ali was my guy. And I used to say, coach, coach. Ali, and by the way, Doc, I don't have to tell you this, he was a sparring partner for the great Joe Louis.
Yeah.
Tell me, Joe Louis did harder than any ever.
Mr. Washington, his son, was a elder, is an elder, at the church I attended for a long time, Bridge Street, one of the legendary churches in Brooklyn and our society, Bridge Street Methodist Church, and his son was the eldest. I used to see his son a lot. I remember when Mr. Washington passed away, and we express our sympathy and stuff like that. But Mr. Washington was always a great time, great interview. I mean, he's one of those guys that was who was the guy who springboarded all these guys, and then all of a sudden, when they get the little fame and popularity, they're gone. You know what I mean?
Indeed. And by the way, Doc, let me also add that George Washington was a hell of a fighter in his own right. Doc, I used to always say, hey, coach, Joe Louis was, his guy, obviously. Ali and Joe Louis, Coach Owens. Ali and Joe Louis. And he used to always say, I used to just die laughing, Doc. He'd always say, Ali the ran, but Joe the caught him.
Well,
when
you talk about that, I got a friend that's part of Second Genesis. Okay. I remember looking at an interview I did with the late Bill Gallo, and down at Gallagher's, and Gallo said they were out somewhere, and Joe and Ali were there, and Ali made a comment about, Joe, you had a bum in the month club, and Joe said, Ali, yeah, and you'd have been one of them. Yeah, he said, well, let's take a quick break here, and be right back as we continue with Calling the Doctor here on SAF Radio. Blake Radio. Okay, don't move. We'll be right back after this message. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul, Channel Sports in Depth of the show. And got Mel Smith Jr. here.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
I am going to... I'm going to have a buddy of mine call and probably join us, too. I wanted to read those verses. And what I'm going to do, since we got Mel on the line, have old Slimmy called. Slimmy, I'm going to do another commercial break. And hold on, don't move. Doc Stanley, Sports Network, the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Sports Network for the show. We are doing some of anything and every here. We are doing our renowned segment where Calling the Doctor, and I got my man Mel Smith Jr. calling. One more time, let's hit that spot. One more time, don't nobody move for your mind, body, and soul. Come on, lady, talk.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Love it, love it, love it. Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul, Sports Network. If you're listening across the way, you can join us. Give us a call at 914. Okay, they're looking for it. 914-338-0695. 914-338-0695. 914-338-0695. Join me and Rooney here on the line as we're talking boxing. 914-338-0695. Give us a little call here in our last 10 minutes. You can join us live here on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Channel. Sports in Depth is the show. And I wanted to read those verses that we salute the 30 years of marriage of the Mendozas and
the 25 years of the Stanleys, my brother and his lovely wife, Paulette, the verses were, they were really touching. Genesis 2nd chapter, verses 18 to 25, and the Lord God said, "It is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helpmeet for him." And out of the ground the Lord God formed every beast of the field and every fowl of the air, and brought unto Adam to see what he would call them. And whatever Adam called every living creature, that was the name thereof. And Adam gave names to all the cattle, and to the fowl of the air, and every beast of the field. But for Adam there was not found a helpmate for him. And the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam, and he slept. And he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh instead thereof. And the rib which the Lord God had taken from man made he a woman, and brought her into unto the man. And Adam said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. And therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and they were not ashamed." That was the first passage that they read, the son read that at the special ceremony they had just passed at Metropolitan Church for Horace and Susan Mendoza. And I just, you know, it was just touching. The thoughts, and then the other part was I got to go to 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter, verses 4 to 7. So we're going to go 1 Corinthians. I wanted to read what the daughter read, 13th chapter, 1 Corinthians. Let me get to my Bible here. First, that's Chronicles. Okay, let me find 1 Corinthians and read. It's about love. And let me get that. Doc Stanley, Sports Enough on the Blake, Red Enough, Rainbow Soul is the 1292. Where are the pages? Okay. Okay, 1292. Let me read that, because it was just really heartwarming. Heartwarming, heartfelt. And, yeah, the Word of God is the Word. So let's read those verses. Dang, 1 Corinthians? I didn't know 1 Corinthians that far back in the Bible, you know? Because you prided yourself as a kid. 1 Corinthians, and let me find that chapter. And it's about love. I remember one of the great lines that 1 Corinthians chapter 13, 4 to 7.
And, Doc, you always seem to have something just appropriate for the time and the circumstance, always, right on time.
Well, thanks, Rooney. That's all the good masters, man. So we got 1 Corinthians 1292. 1 Corinthians, okay. I got to make sure I get that right. Dr. Stanley Sports in Depth, bear with me here. Chapter 13 and verses 4 to 7. And this is really touching, too. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, 4. This doesn't seem right. Okay. Nah, this doesn't seem like I got the right. And though I restore all the goods, carry servant. Okay. And therefore I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, I have not charity. Charity suffereth long. It is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaulteth not itself. It is not puffed up. Doeth not behave itself unseemly. Seeketh not for own. It is not provoked. Thinketh not of evil. Rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. Beareth all things, believe all things, hope of all things, endureth all things. Charity never falleth. But whether there be prophecies, there should be weather, there should be tongues, there should be seas. Love. And that was talking about it. Love is not self-serving, you know. I read a line some years ago by the great Katharine Hepburn, and she said, you know, love has nothing to do about what you're expecting to get, but all about what you're expecting to give, which is everything. And it's just mind-blowing, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you know, it's just you know, it's just mind-blowing. And you think about love, you know, love is
understanding, love is
forgiving.
Well,
you're right, Doc. You know, when you think about it, not to interrupt and pardon me, but love really is all about, you know, giving of yourself. It really is.
It's, you know, love is and the greatest gift of love is that of Jesus Christ, you know, but love is giving, it's caring, it's forgiving, you know, and the great line that friendship, you know, a friend loves at all times. You know, there's a great line. A kid said, you know, a true friend is, you know, a person that sticks with you even though the kid was great, even though they know you're icky. You know, he sticks with you all the time. But it's just, it was just, like I said, I remember when my brother and sister-in-law got married. I remember 25 years ago, they got married on a Saturday. They got married at my particular church. Now, what about you? You never thought about getting married?
No, Doc. I like being a free agent, Doc. Hey, Doc. I suffer from what every woman I have ever dated, Doc, says I suffer from this one setback, Doc. It's called fear of commitment.
Yeah. 914-336-95.
Fear of commitment. That's my problem. Hey, but I will say this. If any, well, put it this way. If I should be so lucky, you know, Doc, if I should be so lucky, I don't think I would run from it now, but I think I do have a bit of a fear of commitment going on there, so I don't. Well, you know, we'll see how things go. I still have time yet.
You know, because you look at sports, at how many guys, you know, as an athlete, you know, to get married young, and you look at the profound effect that and the strength that Mrs. Rachel Robinson. In fact, I was talking to a gentleman at the affair the other night, and we were talking about, you know, Mrs. Rachel Robinson, you know, the strength and support that she had. And Will Chamberlain had a great line, you know, because Will was supposed to be the master of many women. And Will said, you know what? He said, I'd rather have made love to one woman 1,000 times than to have made love to 1,000 different women. And I think, you know, I think men, per se, really would always just like to have one lady. And, I mean, one of the great lines, you know, may matrimony be like the clothing of a fowl, you know, till death do us part. It's just amazing too. Now we've been talking, and we usually do a half hour. We do the 45 minutes. As we move these last 2 minutes, it seems like, Rooney, we're going to have to do 90 minutes the next time. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Souls, and Sports in Depth, the show. This is Sports in Depth, once again bringing you my call in the doctor segment with WF star Mel Smith Jr. With our question, the way we're babbling, we're going to unquestionably do some time with the lights off and the mics still on. So as we go into the last minute or so, we're going to hold on, Rooney, and if you want, we'll babble a little bit more.
Oh, absolutely. Doc, it's always a pleasure.
Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul, Sound Sports and Depth is the show. It is that time where... Dear Lord, thank you for this special time. Thank you for blessings. Thank you for being our God. Much more what we want, but what we need. We ask you blessings, all the blessings in the name of your darling son Jesus, and we thank you. It's the hardest thing. Would you please?
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day. Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
And this lights off, mic on deck, on the doctor. And Lord, thank you for another opportunity, and we praise your holy name. Amen.
that, we're going to, Mooney, we've got the lights off, but the mic is still on. So I'm assuming that it's still a little time, Doc.
Like I said, anybody knows, and I really appreciate this, Doc, because everybody knows that it's harder to get a hold of you than it is the president. You know you're one of the busiest people that I know, so I appreciate this time.
Well, Mooney, it's always a pleasure. Like I said, you know, it seems that now we have to take this to 90 minutes. You know what I mean? But we started this as a half-hour segment.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Doc. Like I said, the thing about you that I love so much is when we have these talks, I just really feel like I just got graduated cum laude from Harvard. I mean, I just feel like I just graduated from the serious university.
Kind words, Mooney. Thanks for the kind words, man. You know,
sincerely. And I didn't realize, quite frankly, how the athletes gravitate, you know, towards you anyway. Because I noticed whenever you walk in the room, no matter how big they are, they're going to be the biggest star basketball player, the biggest star boxer, biggest star football player, baseball player. As a matter of fact, I know you don't want me to say this because you're too modest, but I'm going to say it anyway, and you'll just have to get on my case later. I happen to know for a fact that there was an occasion where the other sports people, sports icons were honoring you, and they had not only the greatest relief pitcher, as far as I'm concerned, of all time, Mariano Rivera, but a host of superstar athletes and dignitaries to honor Doc Stanley.
Yeah, well, thanks. That was a while back. You're going to think that. Thanks, Rooney. Well, you know, it's just, you know, you thank God, man, and it's the people, you know, like you that's come along, man, who's able to carry this mantle, and, you know, all good wonderful things come from God. And one of the things that we've had the luxury of being part of minority media is being able to say what we have to say and be supportive of our athletes, you know. And a lot of guys, and I forget Don Mattingly and David Getty telling me that, you know, the problem with the New York Press was it doesn't matter what you did, it wasn't enough. If you're hitting 400, yeah, but you're hitting 275 with runners in scoring position. If you won 11 games in a row, yeah, but the ERA is 4.2. You know, if you're scoring 20 points a game, yeah, but the team lost the last three. If the team won four games in a row, yeah, but you only have 8 points. You know, they never – I remember Larry Bird. It was funny. And it was when me and Larry started our friendship. It was the last game at the Meadowlands, and I came in before the game, and I said, "That's Larry, can I have those things at the end of the game?" And he looked down at me and says, "You know, I don't know. It depends how bad I tear him up." And because I wasn't really aware of, you know, when you don't know, I thought the athletes, you know, wore the sneakers, a long time, like I used to wear mine. And it wasn't until I went to Julie's house one day and I looked in the room, he had like 7, 8 pairs of sneakers. I said, "What are those?" He said, "Old sneakers, Mel." You know, and I mean, Jordan, Oakley, Ewing, new pair of sneakers every game. Isaiah Thomas told me he can't wear a new pair of sneakers every game. But at the end of the game, I came in, and I think Larry was one rebound or two assists away from a triple-double. And I just came in to sit there and listen to what he had to say. And he looked down at me and said, "Hey, you know what? Come on in the back. Let me get those sneakers for you right now." And we went in the back, and it's needless to say, they're in my top seven. You know, they're a pair that I would not give away. I mean, it'd have to be an odd amount of money to get these. And we sat there, and I'm not a beer drinker, but Larry Bird had a beer, so I had a beer. So me and Larry had a beer, and I said, "No, what are you gonna do now? You gonna play next year, man?" And it's me and Larry in the back, off limits. He says, "I don't know." He said, "You know, it just depends how bad my back is, you know." I said, "This New York press must be the race." He said, No. He said, "The roughest press with me is the Boston press." You know what I mean? And from there, we forged a friendship. And it also shows, like, I'm a Patrick Ewing. I mean, I think I have the most Patrick Ewing sneakers in the world. You know, because Patrick
you
always.
You probably do, Doc. Because I remember one time, I think it was Barkley or Ewing. One of them was like, I know y'all, you're a pair, Doc. I know you're bare. I'll get with you shortly. I got a question, Doc. You know that you mentioned, I have to ask you this before you get any, Doc. You mentioned Larry Bird. As he, Doc, and I, for goodness knows, he used to destroy my Knicks when I was rooting. Let me say, Doc, was he as good and big as the legend, Doc? Larry Bird.
Larry Bird was everything they said he was and more. And beyond that was the humbleness, the kind of teammate he was to not only his teammates, okay, but the kind of person he was, the kind of respect that he had for fellow players. I remember a game in the playoffs, and a rookie or a bench player hit a big shot. And Larry saluted that player. He said, hey, man, that's the kind of shot he needs to make to help him with his career. You know, it just, people understand, you know, Larry was pushed down the throats of a lot of the African-American fans because he was the most singular non-African-American player. But you know, when I got to know Larry, I mean, you can't. If you look at the facts that as a forward, Larry Bird was great because Larry Bird, as a forward, got you double-figure rebounds. I mean, how can you be a forward and you don't get double-figure rebounds? How can you be a guard with no jump shot or you can't dribble? I can remotely understand a guard with no jump shot. How can you be a guard and you can't dribble? You know, but Bird was Larry Bird wasn't great. Larry Bird was great. You know, Larry Bird is without question one of the 50 greatest players. He's one of the 10 greatest players. He's one of the 7 greatest forwards. And when you do forwards, it's Elgin Baylor, thoughts first. I got Dr. J. I got Larry Bird. Malone because of his stats, no question about it. But, you know, Larry was his. I mean, I remember guys would tell me that, you know, the Celtics got the ball. They're down by 2 or they're up by 3. It's about 14 seconds left to go. The other team calls a timeout, and Bird looks at his opponent and says, hold on, I'll be right back because I'm going to shoot the shot right from here. they say Larry could talk to track, man. You know, but Larry was a guy, too, Indiana State. Very cognizant of his position, but a guy who was always there for his African-American teammates.
You know, Doc, it's funny that you should mention that because I believe, and by the way, Doc, I didn't think these guys were mortal enemies, but I was as shocked as that these two that I'm about to mention were as close as I saw on some documentary or something that he and Magic were really tight.
They became close over the course of years. I mean, you know, when I remember I gave Larry a book. I had a book where he did a little prank on Casey Jones, and he laughed. He said, yeah. He said, I did that right here in the locker room. But they told the story of the guys are bitching about Casey Jones, and Larry said, hold on. You know, you bitched about a good coach. We finally got a good coach. Shut up and play for him. Okay? You bitched. The other guy you had, you didn't like him. We got us a great coach here. Quit bitching. Play for him, you know, and I hadn't seen Larry for a year, and Larry was talking to another writer, and I was just standing on the side, and when he looked over at me, so he told me, hey, how you doing, man? You know, I had Larry Bird's home phone number, you know what I mean? He is a great player, a great guy, and I remember we talked. After that tremendous, horrible call, get Larry Johnson a 4-point play.
Yeah, that legend still lives. Larry Johnson with a 4-point play.
Yeah. And luckily for me, I got a pair of sneakers. But, you know, and me and Larry talked, and he said, you know, he said, you don't understand how hard it is to get a team to the finals. Forget about winning it. Just getting the team to the finals. And I mean, and you look back, he was on some great teams, man. But you look at Auerbach, who waited that year. You know, Larry, that first year, didn't come out, didn't go there. But he waited. He waited, and, you know, Larry Bird is everything that they said about Larry Bird, he was. And I remember when he had the fight with Julius.
because me and Trent were having dinner with Julius. I had the Knicks were playing the Sixers, who I was going to play. So I'm down in Philly, and after the game, there's a Chaka Khan concert, and me and Trent, because Trent said, "Hey, Mel, you know, we're playing Philly. Why don't you to come on down?" So I called Julius, he called Turkish, yeah. And that was one of the things I remember about that, too, was, you know, that morning I got up and I'm making up my bed. And then, you know, you kind of feel somebody looking at you. And from around the corner of the next bedroom, I see Trent looking at me with this horrified look on his face. He's like, "Mel, what are you doing?" I said, "I'm making up the bed." He said, "Mel, we don't make up beds around here. We don't make up beds around here." You know, you got this horrified look on his face. "No, we don't make up beds around here, you know." And it was an amazing night. It was an amazing night. Chaka Khan sung, first time I ever saw it, and Julius was driving the Rolls Royce, and we got to a certain part on the highway. And in fact, it was really a night of revelations, man, because we stopped by a club afterwards, and we had dinner. Cause it was at dinner. Right? We had dinner, and I said, "Jay, man, I said, what did Larry say to you, man, to make you, you know, swing like that?" He said, "Mel, he didn't say nothing. He said it was the look on his face." He said it was a look on his face, and the next thing I know, he said I was shooting out a jab. You know what I mean? And then the next game when they played Boston, Julius went down to the locker room, you know, to apologize to Larry, and then him and Larry were sitting out there, you know, talking together. So that was the first thing. Then we get in the car. No, we went to this club, and this girl comes over, tall girl, and you could see she really was a girl, but she. You know, asked us that we, you know, asked Julius, "Dr. J, you want to dance?" And Julius said, "No." He said, "I'm not dancing." And he said, "But, you know, I got two friends here. There's Trent Tucker and Mel Stanley. Maybe my friends may want to dance." And then she left. And there was a girl far off in the corner in blue. Fine girl. And we're in the car. And we got to a certain intersection. And Julius said, "You know, this is where I had the accident with Lynn." Julius and Lynn had an accident. Lynn Swan and Julius Maserati was totaled.
Wow.
And him and Lynn survived. And then, and you know, because we're not on the air, this is something we should have talked about on the air. I wish I had did the other 90 minutes now. He said, "Hey, remember the girl at the club there in the blue?" And me and Trent said, "Yeah, man, she was fine." He said, "Hey, that was the one that was with Teddy the night he had the accident."
Oh, yeah, and that famous car accident, that's for everything.
We were like, what?
His career, because
yeah.
You know, Doc, and I know I'm not telling you anything, but, you know, before, that is what forever changed, you know, his career. Because, you know, after them, you know, I'm not taking anything away from this talent. Everybody knows the talents of Luther, you know, being the, you know, the balladeer and whatnot, the talent that he has. But
mm-hmm.
before all that, Doc, the main man was Teddy.
Yeah, well, I mean, the immovability was without question.
I mean, women throwing all types of lingerie at the guy.
You know, what I remember about Teddy Pendergrass, and we're going to go, because I don't like to say a lot like this when we're not on air with people listening. What I remember about Teddy Pendergrass, when he left the group, because, you know, Teddy, I tell you an amazing story, and this is really, this will be recorded, but they're not here on the air. You know, Teddy Pendergrass was the guy that replaced Billy Paul in Harold Melvin and Blue Notes. And Billy told me that last year in Sao Paulo, Brazil. We're sitting in Sao Paulo, Brazil at Joe's Biaca. And he said, yeah, he said, you know, so Harold kicked me out of the group because he said I couldn't dance. Teddy was the drummer who took Billy Paul's place.
Wow, Billy
Melvin
Paul,
that's
a blast from the past. Billy Paul.
Billy Paul. Billy Paul was a boxer himself, me and Mrs. Jones. And he was a drummer. And when he left the group, I remember an interview, and the guy asked him, you know, is there a chance you can get back? And Teddy said, yeah, there's a chance I can get back. Hey, you know, I mean, hey, man, you know, we can talk this over. Never forget the, yeah, Teddy said, hey. I mean, like, Eddie, I saw an interview when I was in Brazil with Eddie Kendrickson, and Eddie Kendrickson said he didn't want to leave the Temptations. You know, he said he wanted to simply do, you know, Eddie Kendrickson's album.
you know, Eddie Kendricks, you know, of the Temptations, doing a solo album.
You know, Doc, you're amazing. I've been to the Apollo. This fits in with what you're saying. Doc, I've been to the Apollo one time. I've had the pleasure in my entire life. Do you know who was on the bill the one time I ever was able to grace the Apollo, Doc?
Temptations?
And they were separate acts. They weren't with the Temptations.
Really?
David Ruffin and Eddie Kendricks doing solo. They sang one song together later in the show, but it was David Ruffin, Eddie Kendricks, and the Miracles without Smokey.
Wow. Wow. You know what I mean? Because, you know, David's brother was Jimmy Ruffin. He was the last part of that. In fact, the first big hit, the Temptations, you got a smile so bright. You know, you should have been a candle.
Right, I remember that.
You can't do anything that you wanted to, but I can tell. Well, Eddie led that song. The next song, Smokey wrote for David, because they thought he said, and it was the scene, they said, no, Eddie said, David, My Girl. And ironically, Smokey wrote My Girl for the Temptations and My Guy for Murray Wells.
Wow.
Yeah, Smokey, one of the great songs. But and Eddie Kendricks, I saw live at the Ali Shavers fight, the last heavyweight championship fight that Ali was fighting in the Garden against Ernie Shavers, and I saw Eddie Kendricks there. So hey, Eddie, how you doing? Nice guy. And Eddie didn't want to leave the Temptations. He said, but the, you know, they told him he couldn't. He said, and as things went, when he became a solo artist, he said the same powers would be there too. But he said, you know, I wanted to do like Michael Jackson did, you just do an album and still be part of Temptations. He said, but the powers would be told him that
didn't
he
want
couldn't.
That
he, you know, he couldn't do it. You know what I mean? But then his
so
song,
that was part of the breakup, Doc. Good job by you. So that's part of the reason that, you know, for the breakup. So like I said,
well,
when
he,
I
was,
saw them,
David, you know, David, you know, wanted. Supposedly, David Ruffin and Temptations. Dave, you can't do that, baby. You know, Eddie leads, you lead, Paul leads. You can't have that. And supposedly, I think they wanted one time for David to come back, but David just kind of went a little haywire. They did kind of get together reunion-wise. They were very close as a group. They, you know, at one time, they had the name changed. Barry Gordy changed their name to the Pirates. You know what I mean? From the Temptations to Pirates, they changed back. They were the last male group. They used to call them, at Motown, I heard, the No Hit Supremes and Temptations. Now, the Supremes and Temptations were a male and female group at one time. Well, they both came to the top, though. They were the Prime and the Primettes.
Really?
Yeah, they were the Prime and Primettes. And this kind of stuff, you know, you write this down when you, next time we do a show. In fact, yeah, I want to maybe we could come back and do segment part two. What time is it? You know what? Let me see if we can find
something. Exactly by Eastern Time, 7:47 p.m.
Yeah, let me see. Maybe we can come back. Write these questions down. Maybe we'll do a half-hour part two. Let me see if I can get us a half-hour part two here again. And write these questions down so we can talk about these. Those are vital, some vital things. Teddy Pendergrass, the Irving story, and this. So we're going to let it go now, and we're going to see if we can sneak back in and do a little part two.
All right, good enough.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Okay, let's go. Rooney, hang by. Let's see if we can get the 8:30 kick here, baby. Don't move.
All right.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.